Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Thiel, back with another bumper show, talking to managers, chairmen and those behind the clubs that make Non-League Football the enjoyable feast we know and love. Talking of things we know and love, I am joined across the desk here by the one and only Mr. Dave Anson, host of the Non-League Gaffer Tapes podcast.
Yes, good evening. How are you?
Good. It's been an exciting week with the third episode of the Gaffer Tapes out. John Underwood, Neil Baker from Slough Town. Very honest, very open, very insightful.
Yeah, very good.
Actually, very long as well. But
well, that's my fault. That's not their fault. And we'd sort of, I think it's going to be an hour. I think that's how it sort of unfolds.
Which is good, because there's been some great comments on that.
Yeah.
The idea behind it was that we got in depth and got to know a bit more. It's great when we talk to people on here for 15 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes. But you don't really get to the nitty-gritty of what makes them tick.
And it takes time, you know. And to be fair, as I said before, the Steve McKim one was half an hour simply because he had to go and manage his team. And I was forever grateful he gave me the time before the game. But I do think that it takes time. I promise you, and the guys who have interviewed will tell you this, I have a book with me, like a jotter or a notebook. And I open it up, and there's nothing wrote on it. And it always makes them giggle, you know, because they call it my preparation. But it's a deliberate thing. There is no plan on where this is going to go. It's just going to go where it's just guys who sit in dugouts talking about football. And listen, we could make it 2 hours if you want, because you know what we're like. You've been around as managers often enough. But I got exactly what I expected of both of them. I got a bit of stick about hammering them for being joint managers, and I deserve it all. I found that really, really good for me to try and get my head around how it works. And they were very honest and open about how it works now, how it started, how they fell into it a little bit, like we all do at times. They're very much set in stone and have just good guys doing a good job. The last 10 minutes of the podcast has caused a bit of a storm at Slough this week, because we were talking about they're talking about how long till you go to the next level. And I thought, I didn't think they were trying to point score. They were just telling it how it was. And I think the supporters of Slough that have read on Twitter not obviously picked that up.
It's certainly clear from some of the Twitter responses, those that have listened, and those that listened to people that have listened.
Chinese whispers.
And I think with the two of them, the thing that has really endeared them to the Slough fans is that they have been so honest and open all the way through their time there.
Yeah.
And I think that's all they're being. Trying to G up the fans, and they were very respectful of the fans that they have got, full of praise for them.
Yeah, I don't think it's about the ones that are in the gate. It's about trying to get more in the gate.
Which is the problem that we'll discuss, no doubt, with the people that we'll talk to tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
We discuss it every week in, week out. I'm sat in my club at Hazen Yedding United. I've already had discussions with three people today when I've been here about exactly the same problem.
Yeah.
It's as much as a club's success isn't based on their crowds. Yeah. If you want to be properly successful, you need to have a crowd following of some sort just to help pay the bills.
Yes, there. The other thing is, it's the first time I've been to the new ground, and it's a really nice ground, it's tidy. We went out on the pitch and went a quick chat and a photo and did the interview, and it was really nice. It was early Saturday. I left before the game. So it was around about 11:30. So you got to see it without too much hustle and bustle. Really impressed with that. Seen a couple of old faces because I worked there for a year or so myself. But But I just really enjoyed the interview, and I enjoyed finding out about how joint management works in it, and I hope that the listeners sort of got that out of it, because it is different, you know, it has to be different. But they've properly proved it works, you know, so I, you know, which we had a bit of fun about. But yeah, they're good, and I wish them well. And, you know, listen, you can be a million things in life, but sometimes the hardest thing to be is honest, especially in football. And no one can accuse them of trying to hide anything in that interview. And if you like football and you're a Slough supporter, or you just, you're interested as to how careers develop and how they come about, I think it's an excellent listen. I mean, I tell you how good it is. I hardly speak on it. so that makes it very, very good. But, and I have to thank them, and Steve Baker was very open as well, and Steve, and it's proven to be a different little thing that we've got into, and I'm really enjoying it. Because it's nearly like therapy for me. I'm nearly like debriefing myself after all of these years in a dugout and speaking to other people, and a lot of it's very similar thoughts and pain and glory, and we all fall about the same way, you know, in the end.
Yeah, but all four of the guys that you featured so far in the first three episodes, they're guys that I've probably spoken to, interviewed probably several times over the last decade or maybe longer. But I found myself learning about different aspects of their character. And also, if you're a fan and you learn that actually being a manager is so many more things than just picking the side and standing in the dugout on a Saturday.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's what we wanted to do. That's what we spoke about. And you need time to do that. And we do this show and we all love this show, but this is like the microwave oven. We've said it in the past, haven't we, where you go bang, 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 10 questions, see you later. Whereas this show gives me a chance to let it breathe, as Kaz used to say on it. Let it breathe. Well, we can get horizontal. And so it's good. And we hopefully, I've got Alan Devonshire lined up. The other thing I want to say was we are aware that we're trying to get some people from up north, you know, us southerner softies, you know. We are trying to get some people from up north when they travel down this way. And I was due to speak to Jamie at Chorley and I couldn't get there. Again, we were trying to get the hold of the Chester guys, and unfortunately I've got to go to Belfast tomorrow. So we are aware of that stuff and we're trying to do that. But yeah, it's good fun, and I think it goes hand in hand with this. Totally different show, but they're nearly handcuffed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. The non-league gaffer tapes available via Audio Boom and all good podcast providers. And so for our first guests, it is of course a big weekend in non-league cup competitions, and in the FA Trophy, we've hit the second round. Prize money this round is at £5,250 for the winners, with £1,750 to the losers. But the real prize is making progress to the next round. Having knocked out National League title early pace setters Bromley in the last round, Dorking Wanderers of National League South have more National League opposition in the form of playoff chasers, Stockport County. To tell us how his science preparations are going, it's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, owner and manager at Dorking Wanderers, Mark White.
Hi, guys.
Evening,
mate. Now, when I say you knocked out Bromley, I think you probably rocked them with a 3-0 home win in the last round. Was it just one of those games when everything clicked?
Yeah, I thought we. To be fair, we had just started an upward curve, and at the time they had just started to hit a downward one. And I kind of thought before the game, I thought, you know what, we're playing them at a good time and they're probably playing us at a bad time. And I kind of half fancied us. But, you know, it was the highest ever competitive opposition we played. We've only been around 20 years in existence. So to win 3-0 was brilliant regardless. And we were good value for it on the day.
Yeah, and it was a 3-0 win at Leatherhead in the last round as well, wasn't it, prior to that? Is this something of a habit becoming here?
I hope so. That'd be nice.
Because you were the first out of the hat, and you've already got one National League scalp in the bag. You've then got everybody else that you can possibly draw in a competition. Were you a little bit disappointed that you drew another National League club?
No. The one sort of albatross we've got as a club is we've never really got any kind of good quality cup ties. Combination of not being quite good enough in the FA Cup over the years and just always tend to get what we consider mediocre draws without disrespecting any opponents. And this year's been the opposite. We've had a great run. Our local rivals in the first stage, Leatherhead, which was brilliant for the local community, literally 10 minutes apart. Big crowd, Bromley. And my aim was to get a National League side of stature at home. And, you know, because what we want to achieve through these competitions, it's not so much the progress, but the more people we can put in the ground, the more people come back and watch us when we're playing on a wet Tuesday night, you know, in the league. And that's what it's all about, trying to grow the club and create more profile.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I interviewed the two guys at Slough on Saturday who are sort of up in and around with yourselves at the top. And we were talking about going to the next level, Mark, which, to be fair, and I think it's worth saying, Tim's just told me you've had something like 11 promotions in 20 years, which is phenomenal, really.
I heard the 11. I heard the 11 in 19.
Yeah, which to be fair, 11 and 19, is it? Oh, so I've got it wrong. Yeah, I thought it was 11 and 20, 11 promotions in 19, 20 years. But I was just looking at the league table, and the question that sort of came to mind was, you know, you're up and around now, you're talking about getting more people in the gate, which the guys at Slough were talking about as well, because it's essential for the next part and for your progression. Obviously, you know, sponsors as well, but is that what you'll need to get to the next level as well? I know we're talking about the trophy, but just in your league, it's you're doing so well in the league.
Dave, I think that's a really good question, a really great question, because I'm a real advocate for sort of pointing out that even clubs in League One are struggling to survive. You know, I think you know, if you look back 20, 30 years, there was never as many what I'd call professional football clubs that are either A, going to the wall, or B, really struggling to get by. Yeah. So if you can imagine where that's at now, but you know, if you're realistic and you care about your club and what you're doing, you've got to be 3-4 years ahead in your mind, because you've got to build a sustainable club, and that can only be built upon creating profile that generates supporters and attracts commercial activity. And then you can only do your best with what you've got. So I think the next step, to be fair, I don't think we won't do it this year, but to get to the national premier is achievable if you can get your crowds up to the best part of, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 a home game. But I think, you know, anything beyond that, I think now it takes a lot of addressing, to be quite frank.
What would you be averaging at the moment, Mark, gateways?
Well, our average 3 years ago was 60. Right?
Go on, yeah.
Our average now is about 700.
That's very good.
Mainly because we did have an out-of-town ground, only a mile and a half, but it was enough. It wasn't on a bus route, it was on a bypass, and the local authority redeveloped the old Dorking FC's ground, and we were fortunate to have the opportunity to develop that with them. So we're now in the centre of town, and what I've been just, as I mean, like you guys, I'm a football nut. You don't run a team for 20 years.
Yeah.
you know, manage it, own it, and do everything for it, unless you're crazy about football. And what the best thing about it's been is that, you know, my first ever game was walking down to my local team off the back of the high street with my granddad, getting my programme. They were playing Cray Wanderers Dorking, and I kept the programme, read it back to front 1,500 times. and what we've seen is a replica of that. So in spite of all these TV times in terms of Premier League football, you know, box office football, the FA Cup finals at midnight now, no one cares, you know. And what we've found is that we've now got hundreds of local families come down, the kids are back in their shirts, it's a day out, the community speak to each other again. And it just shows that, at a time when for 10 years clubs have been sold off to the outskirts of town, replacing the Sainsbury's, there is a really big part to play still for local football teams. And that's the bit that pleases me the most.
Yeah, and when you talk about walking down to the team that's now in Conference South, with the very first time you walked down there to play for them, or how do you feel now that you're just about to take on Stockport County, which is a recognised name in English football?
Yeah, it's about trying to get the sweet spot between the one side of me says, we fear nobody, and you know, our success speaks itself, and we know it will be a very tough game for them. They'll know that in advance. The other side of me says, we was playing in Division 5 of a park league 19 years ago, yeah, where we had to drag the nets across the pitch. So it does, you are right, Dave, it does signify something, you know, to play a club of this stature and to share it with all the committee and supporters and volunteers and businesses that have got us as far as we have is what it's all about. And, you know, I think there's more in us yet, you know. Certainly, I'd like to think this weekend there's more in us yet. That, you know, the cup run's not over, but certainly moving forward.
Last one for me. I think when you finish with us or sometime tonight, you should go away, check what day you played your first game with Dorking, them 19 years ago, and see who Stockport played that day. That would be interesting. But listen, I'm hogging this because I'm genuinely interested in it, because I actually I was at the old ground with Wimbledon, and to be fair, it did need renovated, that's for sure. But I think it's a great story so far, and I say so far because it certainly hasn't finished where it's going, Tim, you know?
No, it's not. No, I mean, believe it or not, I'm a Wimbledon fan. Old Wimbledon, you know, old money, if you like. But yeah, one of the reasons behind this club starting was that demise. And back in the day, because I was home and away, Plough Lane days. But no, it is. It's a great story. It's quite unique, to be fair. And I think you're dead right. I know 10 years ago, we was in a park league, and Stockport were only one promotion off what was the Premier League, I believe. It's their highest ever position in the Championship, I think.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so, it just shows what can be done within Graft. We've got a lot of good people around.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you say about building that community at Dorking now, because that's also certainly what Jim Gannon, the manager at Stockport County, has done since he's gone back there as well, because they were on a downward spiral, I guess, weren't they? And that's I know that's something that they focused on, is building that community back, which I guess probably means that you'll have a bumper crowd coming to you on Saturday for the trophy game.
Yeah, we're hoping to get best part of 2,000. Early tickets have been really good. They're well into four figures. Jim and the Stockport, they're right. But see, I, as an avid football follower, I see it everywhere I go. I went to Bath City this year. I was so impressed with the work they're doing there. I think clubs know now, if they are not at the heart of the community, or they don't have a backer that could be there 1 minute and go the next, you're going to struggle to exist. The clubs can only be successful that way. And most of all, though, managing expectation of supporters is what's really important. You like your Stockports and your Berries and your Boltons and or whoever they might be, you know, is that every supporter wants more, and they want the club to bring in more, spend more, do more. But in reality, you know, what would they rather have? You know, some highs, some lows, or nothing? Because some of these people now have got nothing. And sadly, and that is happening more and more. The stories you hear about clubs struggling to sustain themselves. So, yeah, so for me, it's all about the community and bringing it to the club for sure.
Well, as Dave said, it's a fantastic story already. I mean, it is Oscar season, so I don't know if Hollywood producers are looking for the next one.
He needs to sort that cough out, doesn't he, before, or he won't see Saturday.
I've had it exactly that. I've been telling my friends that, by the way, yeah. I know, it's been around, it's all Christmas I've had this. It's actually at its best, believe it or not.
You need a big scarf and a very warm hat, yeah, I think, for Saturday. But Mark, We wish you well at the weekend and for the rest of the season.
Well, he'll be back on because look where they are in the division. So I'd say Easter time, we'll be back on to see how you're doing.
I'm sure we'll be monitoring and keeping in touch. But Mark, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, thanks for the interest, Dave.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
Dave, we didn't talk too much about the story because we touched on it upon it there. Yeah. But I mean, the Crawley and District League was where they started. They're in their 20th season, so 19-20. But as you say, maybe it'll be the 12th promotion, and I can see them getting it. As much as Stockport will be well organised, I can see them causing another upset. They're at home; it's their biggest, probably one of their biggest games ever. They've got the strength there in squad playing wise and the mindset and everything snowballing in the right direction there to have a really good trophy run as well.
I think the big thing when you're the lower club, if you genuinely want to sort of go through, some people just want the big game and to go to the big ground away from home, but to draw the team at home. Stockport won't fancy it. They won't, they won't fancy it. They're professional footballers, but it's not a draw they'll have looked forward to. You know, they'll have to travel down, they'll have to the hotel stuff, you know, get their mindset right, which is so much easier to say than do. And Mark, the last thing Mark will have to do, Mark only needs to go in and name his team Saturday. The motivation stuff looks after itself. But I just think it's an incredible, I love it. Like 19 and 20 years, they've gone from playing in the park to they're knocking on the door of the Conference National and playing teams like Stockport. I think I'll definitely be looking out for one, for the results Saturday, but two, I hope they make the playoffs because that'll be interesting as well. And last one for me, funny, he said a crowd of 700, and I was speaking to the lads at Slough. And they were saying they have around about 800, and they're both in the same boat. To go to the next level, you need to certainly break the 1,000 crowd just to give yourself a chance financially.
And it's success every year that'll bring him in.
Well, he can't do any more than that. You know, he is every other year, and that's stupid success, isn't it?
So it's not just the FA Trophy this weekend, it's also the last 32 of the FA Files. 16 ties in the fourth round of the competition, with 1875 awaiting the winners and 625 to the losers in prize money. The competition really does begin to heat up in this round. And I'm very pleased to have our next guest on to talk about his side's home tie, as I've been tracking them for a while now. And as a chairman, his tale is one I'm sure many will want to hear. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, chairman of Worcester City FC, Steve Good.
Hello, Tim. How are you, mate? Fine, thank you.
Yeah, I'm good. I know you've got a big night ahead of you and another meeting. These are sort of things that fall upon your shoulders. But we'll talk FA Vars in a minute. But let's start with a little bit of history. Worcester FC established way back in 1902, considerable success. But the last decade, it's really been full of difficulty, isn't it? I mean, I remember as Hayes and Yedding playing you in step two of the pyramid. You were switched from the south to the north of the National League, Conference League as it was back then. Then there was talk of a new ground at Nunnery Way, and that led to St George's Lane, your old ground, being vacated in, I think, June 2013. But then I think, as we often hear, there wasn't enough money in the kitty to finance the new ground, and You entered a ground share at Kidderminster Harriers, which I imagine was costly and but needs must at that sort of time. And then you got relegated for the National North. You then took the additional relegation for financial reasons, become a supporters' own club, and you've regrouped. You're a step five football in the Midland League Premier Division. You're still there. Ground sharing now at Bromsgrove Sporting at the Victoria Ground. And as somebody is involved with a club myself for 7 years that with nomads wandering around without a ground, this must have been one of the toughest times in your life, Steve.
No, I agree completely. I mean, it's something I've been a fan for 50 years now. Back in the 70s, when Worcester was a real top non-league team, and we were founding members of the Alliance Premier League, which is now the Conference or the National League. Those days was when my late father was chairman, and we had an outstanding side. over the years, well, in the past 40 years, we haven't gained any promotions. We've had relegation, and we've also had the voluntary relegations. But we are starting to work back now. We've actually got a real hard board that, you know, is all for the football club. We're all fans, and we all want to get Worcester City back where they were. We've now gone fan-owned, as you mentioned, which was something that, when I became chairman, I had a list of four things I wanted to do. The one was the finance side, which we are still losing money because we're actually paying outside Worcester. But the actual losses from a few years ago, the one season we lost almost £300,000. The losses are now down to about 20. I also wanted a football team that would play football. Again, we've got local lads and experienced players that want to play for the football club. The money side of it doesn't come into a lot of them, which is a real pleasing thing to hear in non-league football. And the final thing I wanted to do was to get a ground back in Worcester. And that is something we're doing next season. We'll be playing at Cranes Lane alongside the Worcestershire FA. And there'll be another team there with us called the Worcester Rangers. That's another local team. But in 14 months, you know, we've gone from maybe looking down the barrel of a gun to last another 2 years, to now we've actually got a future again. And as I say, next season when we are back in Worcester, I'm sure our crowds will double, which is something, you know, our fan base is outstanding. So yeah, things are looking good at the moment. I mean, there's still a long way to go, but, you know, we've got a lot of people at this football club that want to see us be successful. So, you know, things are starting to turn the corner.
Yeah, and I guess the big thing when you are nomads, it's not only you're paying out because you've got a ground share, but you have such limited income streams, and you know, everything becomes an outgoing. And I guess being back in Worcester, that means there's a chance of increased gates, but I believe you're also going to have a revenue stream from the bar and from the catering as well, which when you're looking to pay the basic expenses, it just means that you can concentrate on building a football club.
Well, that's correct. I mean, luckily, we've got a very, very successful gold bond, which is a pound a week competition we run. We have another competition called Team Builder. So those two main things roughly cover 80% of the cost of our playing staff. So if we didn't have those, we would have folded a couple of years ago. Regarding match day revenue, what comes in at the moment, the only money we get gate receipts, but of course we have to pay Bromsgrove Sporting, we have to pay for the pitch, we have to pay for stewarding, the food, all those sorts of things, which does add up. So the actual gate normally cover the basic, but with our new facility, we will have a social club, which we will run that, so it is beneficial to the fans and to the club, of course, but we'll try and keep everything as low as possible. We'll have food at the moment. Anything and anybody that buys a drink or food at Bromsgrove, we don't receive one penny of that. It all goes to Bromsgrove. So those are two things that will definitely, you know, make us money. So yeah, it'll be nice not to be biting their nails every week wondering where the money's coming from, because, you know, at least money will be coming into the club.
Yeah, you'll only be biting your nails about the football on the field. That's what chairmen do.
But Steve, when you said about your crowd, what sort of gates would you be pulling now? Because I was there many years ago. I always remember it being like a really big old ground, good crowd. What gates would you be pulling now?
Well, at the moment, our average is about 280, which isn't brilliant. But what it is good for where we are, but it's not good because of the size of Worcester. Sure. The problem is people have to travel 40 miles, like 20 miles to and 20 miles back from the game, which has been going on now for 7 years. So to still keep that sort of fan base is outstanding. I remember about 4 years ago when we played Coventry in the FA Cup, we took over 3,000 supporters to that game. Then we played Scunthorpe on a Sunday away. We sold 2,600 tickets for our travelling fans, which we actually could have added another 1,000 if we were given the ticket. And I was amazed that game, which we drew with them, on the return game, the replay, we actually sold out at Kidderminster, sell out crowd. And the thing that really hurt me was Scunthorpe brought 80 supporters, whereas if we had known that, like I said at the time, even though I wasn't chairman of the club, I would have gave the Scunthorpe supporters the stand where the directors sit, and I'd have sold another 1,000 seats to Worcester fans, because Worcester is, even though we've got a real good rugby team here, it will always be a football city. I'm not bothered anybody says about that. We've always been and we always will be a football city. So if the city can slowly progress back up the leagues, which, you know, we're hoping to do, I think people will see a massive change. You know, I'm just hoping that we actually get the support of local people, which I'm really sure we will do. So I'm really looking forward to the future, and especially Sunday's game. It's absolutely massive for us.
Well, I know for a fact that if you have a big FA Vaz run, that it absolutely increases your gate. You know, I can vouch for that for myself from sort of last season.
I mean, it's too early to say we're going to get to Wembley. We're doing one match at a time. I have told Ashley, our manager, that if we get to Wembley, we'll be wearing white suits. So I'm only winding them up, really, the old Liverpool suit. You know, I thought that'd be quite funny, all of that. So, no, Worcester, as I say, I'm confident, and I've gone through wrong, but I'm confident that if we got to the Vaz final, we would take in excess of 20,000 supporters.
Wow.
Because we're such a football city. And they're I'm sure Bromsgrove fans will come and watch, Kidderminster fans will come and watch, even Hereford, who's our arch rivals, even though we don't play in any real competitive games. But Hereford have always been our arch rivals, and they always will. But I'm sure they'll bring some fans to support us.
So
it'd be brilliant if we could do that.
So do you think being a Sunday game, because of your ground share, you've got Coventry United, your visitors, will that help swell the gate this weekend as well?
Well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, luckily, Coventry are in our league. They are the highest supported team. They average, I think it's 340 fans. So I'm hoping that, you know, Coventry might send about 50, which will be outstanding for this league. I mean, it doesn't sound many fans to travel. I mean, Worcester normally take anything up to 100 fans every away game. I mean, our like away support is unbelievable. I mean, recently we just played Highgate away, and they average about 45. The gate was 170. So I'm sort of not saying that everybody extra was Worcester, but when we scored, you could hear the majority of crowd of Worcester. So I know in Coventry do bring a few, and I've had a few people tell me that they're coming to the game that actually don't normally come. So I would be disappointed if the gate wasn't about 500. I would be disappointed if it wasn't that. And as I said, as we go on in this competition, it will get bigger and bigger. You know, it's just something to look forward to. It keeps the season going. It keeps interest in the club. And that's the main thing, you know, to keep the interest going till the end of the season.
Yeah, we speak to the chairman, managers, coaches week in, week out. And particularly when we get to this stage of the competition, you know, that last third too, how important a Vaz run is. But with you coming back to Worcester as well, it's almost, we talk about Hollywood producers looking at films to write about football tales. It would be the perfect alignment, wouldn't it, to go on that Vaz run?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, the actual history of the football club and what we've done, it's like back in 69 when we beat Liverpool in the FA Cup. I mean, that was massive. I mean, I'm only 50-odd and I wasn't around in one day. But people still talk about that. And just to mention that I'm off to a funeral next week. The goalkeeper that played for Worcester that day has passed away, and I'm travelling to Reading to represent the club. I mean, because we are all about the history of our football club, and I think that's important to go along with. But yeah, it just gets so much encouragement around. Everybody's talking about it. I mean, I actually remember the FA Cup matches, which I've mentioned before. The buzz around the town is unbelievable. And if we can just go those few extra steps, I think Worcester will be completely blue and white. And it'll be great for Worcester regarding getting somewhere like that. But as you mentioned, regarding the film, what a story it would be, a club that's homeless, getting to Wembley, moving into our new ground next season, and hopefully climbing up the leagues, which, you know, can definitely happen. You know, and the one thing I'll say about being a chairman, I used to enjoy my football. I obviously don't enjoy it anymore, because you're at games, and when you lose, it's falls on the weekend, which I'm sure it's the same for the average football fan. But when you're chairman of the football club, it's a lot worse when you lose.
Yeah, you want to try being a manager.
On the other hand, well, yeah, being a manager would be horrendous, I'm sure. But yeah, but it's just one of those things where, you know, people come to you at the end of the game if you played well. They always compliment you. But I think people now at Worcester expect expect a standard, and they can see now what we're trying to do. They can see the effort from the players, especially the younger ones. I mean, even when we lose games, there's always a positive thing about the game where somebody's done something which nobody would expect. And I think Ashley Vincent and his backroom team have worked wonders, because we're such a good side to watch now. I mean, we actually concede goals, like a lot of teams, but we score goals. And it's just a fun place to be, especially for somebody who's coming to watch the one-off game. And they'll go away, and I'm sure they'll come back and watch again.
Well, Steve, it's been great to get you on the show, and it's always good to hear about clubs that have got a long history, holding on by their fingernails and then building a history again. So we wish you well at the weekend and wish you well for the rest of the season.
No,
and we'll stay in contact with you.
Yeah, good luck.
Just before you go, your little chap who's with you today, I believe he was the manager of the team that won the Vars last season.
Yes, that's correct, Steve, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, I didn't have any little read up. I believe that he wore a Wimbledon shirt under his shirt, which was his good luck shirt.
That's correct, yes.
I believe that. I'm just wondering, is there any chance we could borrow it? No, I'm only joking. You never know. It worked for you. It might work for us.
No,
I'm pleased you asked for his shirt and not his lucky pants.
Steve, if you're a triple XL, there's no problem. We'll send it to you.
Okay, cheers, man.
Cheers,
lovely speaking to you.
And
I'll say, definitely stay in touch. Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Cheers, Steve.
You take care. Bye-bye.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
So, in EFA Vars, the man opposite me really comes into his own. Were you aware that he's also still the reigning FA Vars winning manager? Open brackets, retired, close brackets. Well, my next guest is no stranger to Dave Anderson or to Wembley himself. Over 40 years involved behind the scenes at his club, and he's seen them going to Wembley twice, unfortunately losing on both occasions in the FA Vars final. I guess he's hoping to emulate Mr. Anderson and go one better this season. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show. I believe general manager, treasurer and everything else at the football club that keeps West Auckland Town ticking. Welcome, Stuart Alderson.
Right, Jim. Pleased to meet you. Just one thing you've got wrong there, Tim. I've been three times, mate.
You've been three times? Well, tell us more about the sad plight.
The first time was in 1961 when West Auckland got the Amateur Cup final at Wembley.
Yes.
And were beaten by Walthamstow Avenue. So that was my first trek to Wembley.
Wow.
And I've been at the other two as well.
You've had some, they're highs as well as lows, though, aren't they?
The highs, yes, the highs. For a little village like we are, to get as far as we have, it's unbelievable, really. But, we're there again this time. Last year we got knocked out by the team that beat us, that won the Vars. Chelsea.
I know. That's how I managed them, Stuart, so I know your ground well.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I remember. Right on, it was 2-0.
I know you are now, Linda.
Yeah. No, I remember it well. I remember the game well. I remember the the draw, when we got the draw, we were thinking, oh my goodness, we couldn't have picked a sort of harder draw because of your record, yeah. especially at home in the Vans. So I can see the ground, I can see it all. It's something that'll live with me forever. But I was just looking, Stu, never mind, it's history now, it's gone, so I'm not allowed to mention the word Wembley in here anymore. Tim hits me with stuff. But looking at the draw quickly, I think you're the only team left that was in the quarterfinals last year. And you're in it again this year.
Yeah, I think we are. Yeah. We are. And this team, a lot of teams, the new teams coming this time, do you have? A lot of new teams. This side, obviously, we've had them watch. But they just, what happens on the day, really? I've seen all this before. You go and watch a team and it's never the same. But hopefully we can. I think they've been doing well, mind. But they haven't. The last few Saturdays, they haven't been playing through bad weather.
Yes.
So whether that affects them any, I don't know.
It sort of does that this time of year. But just looking at your own record, sort of mid table. So it's
the Kelly Chuggy, we got off to a bad start, but what we've done over the last 22 games, I think we've won 18. We've only lost two out of the last 22.
Okay, so you're right on form again.
Yeah, we've been doing all right. So hopefully we can get this one down. But they're never easy. I've never seen any easy games when we get to this level.
No.
They have all to play for, haven't they?
Yeah, well, nothing's easy in non-league, is it, Stuart? I remember seeing an article, I think, maybe with yourself or with Jim, the chairman, about the struggle that the club was going through just to move on a day-to-day basis because it costs a lot to run a football club, doesn't it? And you're there on a day-to-day basis to try and keep things, keep the lights on effectively.
It is, right. If you didn't have sponsors, you'd struggle like madly to even get through any rounds, really. I mean, they're moving teams on, out the Northern League and moving up another level. To do that, you need more and more money every time, whether they like it or not, but that's what you'll have to find. Because the travelling is be twice as far as what we're travelling now, which we've done for years. So it won't be easy for the teams to go up until they all get up there. The teams that took three out of the Northern League last year, I think they're going to take another three this year. That might help it a bit, that you're not travelling all over. If they all get together and you get a few North East Counties teams in. But other than that, it will be difficult to find the money to do it.
And as the restructuring and moving clubs out of the Northern League, has that impacted on crowds as well?
Yeah, it will do on the crowds. We don't get the crowds like. I don't know what they think you're going to get in to watch football matches. You get to the semi-final, you might get a couple of thousand in. But other than the rest of the games, you're going to get 200 or 300 people in to watch. And to travel away, you're going to need coaches, which you don't need now. I just don't know how clubs are going to manage it. But the teams that's gone up the last year, they're still there. I mean, Morpeth's there, Mask's there, and South Shields. Well, South Shields had a good setup and everything, so they were all right. But the others, they still find it hard. Even Dunstan, Dunstan was a good side in our leagues, but they're not doing that really well when they travel up there. But how do you get players off work to go midweek? It's very difficult.
And you yourself as well, I said that, over 40 years involved, you told me about the Amateur Cup, so you've been a fan way before that as well. And to give listeners an idea, we're recording this, what are we now, coming up at 7:30 on a Thursday evening. Mm. Are you at home now? Have you been able to leave the club?
Yeah, I'm at home now. I've been this afternoon, but I'm back home now.
But
I'm there every day. You've got to be there every day.
So Friday, tomorrow, a big game before a big FA Vars weekend. What does your day consist of tomorrow?
Tomorrow, right. I'll set off in the morning and we'll go and get the stuff for the canteen to get that open goal. Then we'll get the strips. Then we'll get the programmes we've got to put together. That's the idea. And then the lads are putting their markings on the field in the morning. And that takes all day. Take all your day up tomorrow. And then when you come to match day, it is all day, believe you or me. And trying to get volunteers, you don't. I've tried and tried. And we go to all these clubs here, and they're the same people running these clubs year after year.
Yeah.
When you go, they're the same people. There's no young people run them. But where it'll come to an end, I don't know. Not very easy, I tell you. What would you like in your end?
Listen, I've been doing it 30 years, Stu, and I still see people who were there the first year walked in, they're still doing, no matter what, churchy, whatever club it is, and you go in and it is frightening that we're not getting an awful lot of young people through. But I really think that there'll be a change, because I think that people are not so much getting disillusioned by the top end of the game, the Premier League, but it's just getting out of people's price range. It's becoming...
I agree with that.
And I always say, listen, pay a tenner in the non-league ground, you can have a pint until 10 to 3, you can change ends at half-time, then you can have a pint with the manager and the players off that game for a tenner. It's a no-brainer for me.
That's right. I mean, I haven't watched the Premiership game, the times I knock it off.
But
it's all right doing this passing at the back and all this. Look, to me, we're not at the level that we can do that. There's one mistake and you're down. It was always taught in ours, get that ball in their penalty area. As quick as you can. But they don't. They're all trying to follow suit and they can't do it, man.
No.
You can't. It must be great. I think it must be great for the other team when a goalkeeper's throwing it out to his right back and he's trying to pass it across the pitch. Gee, amazing. They get the breather then, aren't they? Where they wouldn't have, and the ball was coming straight back at them.
Well, I'll tell you what.
And I think you see a bit different in the Championship.
Yeah.
I don't think they do it as much as what they do in the Premiership.
I remember the second half of the game at your place in the Vaz, and believe me, I think you put the ball in our box about 700 times in the second half. I remember it well. I had my eyes shut for most of it.
I bet you were.
For people that don't know, as well as the FA Vaz exploits, the club, West Auckland Town, I mean, you're renowned, certainly in the North East, and for those in the wider football community that like these sort of things, that you were World Cup winners, well, twice World Cup winners at the start of the century.
That's right, 2009 and 2011, they won the World Cup, the Thomas Lipton Trophy, which must have been a magnificent achievement at the time. When you read all the history about it now, people can't believe what happened, but it did happen. We sent a chap over there last year to go over to Turin and find out everything that happened, and he got a full story of it, and he's put it all together in a book. So how they got over there and come back, went back again, I don't know. But it happened. It happened.
And if anybody wants to know a bit more about that story, if you go to the West Auckland Twitter account. You can find pinned there a link to a great 15-minute documentary featuring, well, Stuart himself, documentary called Our Cup of Tea, which tells the tale of those World Cup wins. Well worth a watch, narrated by Tim Healy of Our Feeder's Aim Pet Fame. It's one of those things that makes you realise why you love non-league football.
That's right. I'm pleased you read it. I'm pleased you're saying that. Because it is really good where they put it together. So luckily we've got a lad that's been over to Dubai, and they've been asked some questions about it. He said, well, there's a team over there that won the World Cup twice. See if you can find a bit more about them. So he's helping us with this. So hopefully we can move it on a little bit, maybe raise a bit of funds anyhow. That's what we're hoping for.
Well, to be first, I'm just to say, checking who's left in the Vaz, and yourselves are the only team that's left that I know. So I'm officially putting my West Auckland. Yes, I am. Which was probably a kiss of death, but I wish you very well for the rest of the tournament, mate.
Well, I appreciate that, dear. Thanks very much. All the best to you, mate.
Thank you for joining us on the show, Stuart, and best of luck at the weekend.
Right. Thanks very much.
So, Dave, the FA Vaz, do you feel lost not being involved this year?
Do you know what? No. But when I seen it tonight on the script, it's amazing how quick it comes round again. And obviously, when you see the fixtures that the last 32, I nearly have butterflies in my stomach, because you remember it could take you straight back there and sort of speaking to Stuart and that. And, you know, West Auckland, I can visualise, I can see every ball being kicked in
the head. I've only seen it on, you know, video and photos, but it looks quite a picturesque.
It's
the rolling fields to one side.
Yeah,
I think,
I just remember there's a little slope, the stand, one of them places,
the brick walls.
You never think you're going to play football in West Auckland, and instead in Darlington the night before, and just to just a real, well, listen, for obviously for myself and Churchy, great memories, you know, but I always remember how quiet the crowd was at West Auckland, because I think in the first half we were decent and we went 2-0 up, and I always thought it was going to be a lot more hostile than it actually was. They were actually very nice people, to be honest. Second half, they proper had a go at us, and we found something else out about ourselves that day. But no, it's great to speak to Stuart, and as I say, I think it's only right that I pin my flag to the West Auckland mast because they're the only ones that's left in it from this time last year.
So it's the time of the week to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and David Richardson, senior writer at the Non-League Paper, joins me on the line there. David, it's been a busy old week in Non-League, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. It's turned the year, as we were just saying off air, it's sort of a normal week as such. No bank holidays or anything like that, but no, busy time, and quite a lot of transfer moves now as we sort of enter January, and you know, Football League clubs can start looking at signing players and letting other ones out on loan. So a lot of activity so far.
Yeah, it's been a busy old week on that front. And yeah, I guess, yeah, looking at the clubs that have been delving into non-league and snapping them up into the Football League, no surprises the clubs involved. I mean, I guess the big signing, probably Peterborough taking Jack Taylor from Barnet.
Yeah, for a fee of £500,000, which could go up to £1 million with Adams and Bruce Sweden and things like that. So, yeah, a real sort of a big figure, really. And I spoke to Darren Curry, the Barnet manager, yesterday, who couldn't praise Jack Taylor highly enough. You know, he's obviously gone to Peterborough, League One side. He was sort of renowned for looking in non-league for the sort of next best talent and then developing them at a higher level. And yeah, so you got another one in Jack Taylor, and Darren Kyrie was saying obviously he'll be going into a League One club, but you know, within the next sort of 3 or 4 years he wouldn't be surprised if he was at a top end championship club or even the Premier League, is what he said. So you know, I don't think appraisals come much higher than that. And obviously it will be a blow for Barnet, but that's a very decent figure for them to go out and, you know, not necessarily replace Jack Taylor this month, because it would be very difficult to do that given how talented he is. But, you know, hopefully strengthen maybe in other areas and try and push on to the playoffs. But good to see a non-league player getting his chance in the Football League, and we'll definitely keep an eye on his progress over the next few seasons.
Yeah, and good to see a decent reward to the club as well, because so often we see clubs, you know, offering, you know, maybe a few thousand or something like that, because they're taking a chance on the player. Well, you know, Peterborough certainly know their non-league very well and have taken a chance on many a player over the years and come up trumps with it. So I guess they knew what they were getting, and as a wise investment for them.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good point about the fee. You know, like you do often see players moving on for little amounts, and you know, maybe something's agreed in a tribunal, but you know, ultimately it's perhaps not sort of what they're worth, really. But I think, as you say, Peterborough are a club who, you know, always come down into non-league to find these sorts of players, and they do fork out these decent fees as well. So good to see in that respect. And I'm sure it won't be the last bit of business they do in non-league, and probably maybe not even in this one either.
Yeah, that, I mean, certainly people from Peterborough are always always around at non-league games. If anybody that knows any of the scouts will probably tell you that Peterborough are one of those that do track their non-league very well. And, of course, other clubs that track non-league well are clubs that have moved out from non-league. And Forest Green Rovers are making the signing of Josh March from Leamington as well.
Yeah, another Football League move. Great for Josh. Personally, I haven't seen him play this season, but from what I've heard and from what what my colleagues say, and having spoken to Paul Holleran, the Leamington manager, I think he's been very highly rated down there, and has certainly received a lot of plaudits in National League North this season. And again, you know, good to see a player getting his chance in the Football League. I think there is, just goes to show how much undiscovered talent there is really at these levels, for whatever reason, whether they've been released at a pro club or have had injury issues. You know, these two players ultimately, you know, can still sort of revive their career in non-league. And, you know, I think every year you always see these players move on, and one of the things they're always quick to say is how much they've learned from the non-league game. The people they would have played alongside, the managers they'll have played under, and the clubs that they'll have been at. And, you know, as we know, it's not all glamour in non-league, and I think players will probably be sort of the first maybe to see that side of it at times. But it does give players a chance to play games and try and sort of, you know, set their career back on fire, really, and give it sort of that boost they need. So good to see another player moving on upwards.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see whether other clubs are tracking the performance of these former non-leaguers going into the Football League, because you've also got Recco Hackett Fairchild moving to Portsmouth from Bromley. Yeah. And obviously Portsmouth, again, another side that have taken a gamble on some non-league players in the recent past, I guess because of their financial issues that they face themselves, and they just take a risk. But with the right setup, these players can thrive even more than they have been at non-league.
Yeah, it's interesting. Portsmouth finding Marika Fairchild from Bromley. They seem to have sort of been going down that similar route, like you say, as Peter, are looking sort of in the lower leagues to try and pick up players. Obviously, Ollie Hawkins was one that they've got currently, who was at Dagenham. And also Jamal Lowe, who is now actually playing at Wigan. But obviously, he was at Hampton when he got his move. And they do seem to be going along a similar line as that. I saw Hackett Fairchild a few times this season, actually playing for Bromley. Sort of a very quick and lively sort of winger stroke forward. And, you know, it's no surprise, really, that he's been catching the eye. You know, he's certainly impressed me with the performances I saw of him, and that was only in several games. So to have sort of that impact that he's had in maybe 3 or 4 months there playing for Bromley, it is great, and hopefully he can get more opportunities at Portsmouth, which is a big step up. Obviously Portsmouth and also Peterborough are both challenging for promotion from League One, but you know, we hope they do get the game time there and continue to develop like they have done.
Yeah, obviously Bromley doing well there at the top of the National League, but also an opportunity for one player certainly to move from a bit lower down, moving from Enfield Town to Bolton for Mohamedou Fall.
Yeah, that's right. It was sort of an endless list of players this week. We're sort of doing a little bit of a transfer sort of special, I guess, in the non-new paper on Sunday. Rounding up all these moves and seeing what other potential ones may be happening. But again, you know, Enfield at step three, it just goes to show that, you know, you can find these players out there, and they are out there. And it's great to see them being recognised and, you know, taking a risk, because that is what it is ultimately. But, you know, if it's calculated and they've done their research and their scouting as they should have done, then, you know, really it's probably one worth taking, because you know, if you can find that next gem, then it's it can have pay great dividends in the future if you then sell them on, or if they help you to climb up the leagues. Obviously Danny Rose, one who hasn't got a move, but he has been transfer listed by far, which is an interesting one.
Talking of people that have been snapped up, we haven't yet seen a non-league manager being snapped up this season, as far as I'm aware. I'm racking my brains trying to think, but certainly the managerial merry-go-round has been active again this week, and a big move by Welling, where chairman and manager at the time, Mark Goldberg, has sacked himself but brought in a man that certainly knows how to manage at non-league.
Yeah, Bradley Quinton's got in there, who obviously we know from leading Braintree to promotion a couple of seasons ago into the National League. He did a great job there at Braintree. Obviously, that was the season, their first season back at Step 2, having been relegated, and he took them right back to the top tier again. He's been out of management for a little time now, but I suppose he sort of bided his time. There's obviously been quite a lot of opportunities that have come up, but I think he's always been in contact with Mark Goldberg there at Welling. I think initially before Steve King went in there, I think he was interested in the job, and now he's got it. I suppose it's a probably difficult one for him to go into halfway through the season and not having the greatest of times in National League South. But I'm excited to see what he can do there. He knows these sort of levels inside out, as he proved at Braintree. He can have that sort of impact and get them higher up in the league. I look forward to seeing what he can do there. He's certainly got plenty of work to do there, though.
Yeah, it's certainly a tough one coming in. I think they're just above the drop zone on goal difference, and then I've got a game against the leaders, Wildstone, this weekend. I think is his first league game in charge. So
yeah,
it's maybe got headlines written all over it, but it's going to be a tough challenge.
Yeah, a bit of a baptism of fire, I think they call that one. But I think Wilson have lost back-to-back games at the moment. Obviously, still 4 points clear, I think, at the top of National League South. But maybe a good time to play them. I don't know. But we'll see if there's an immediate new manager bounce there. But I think it will be a little bit of a case of biding his time there in the first few weeks, sorting out the squad, bringing the players in that he wants. I see there's already been a few shipped out. Moses Emmanuel being maybe the headline of that. A striker that I've always liked. We'll see. I'm sure he's got plenty of irons in the fire, and there'll be plenty of players coming in there. I should just expect.
Yeah, and so that's it. We've had a busy week behind us, and then we've got a super busy weekend ahead of us. We've got the second round of the FA Trophy and the fourth round of the FA Vars. I'm sure plenty of match reports for you guys to be rounding up this weekend.
Yeah, a bit of a match sort of packed edition on Sunday. Obviously, like you say, the two cup competitions, which are getting towards that stage now where maybe Wembley and non-league final day is becoming a little bit more of a reality. Maybe some clubs who are still left in that competition who might not be having the best league seasons might now be looking at that as a sort of serious thing that they can progress in and go further into the competition. So we'll be covering all of those games in Sunday's paper, and we've got a lot more. Matt Badcock has spoken to Jody Brown, who was Peter Taylor's assistant at Dagenham Redbridge and then sort of briefly took over as caretaker once he had moved on. But he talks about sort of his experiences there. He's obviously keen to get back into management now that Darren McMahon's taken over and he won't be staying on. John Couch has spoken to Neil Smith at Bromley, obviously, about that Rico Hackett Fairchild move, as we've been talking about. And again, his sort of hopes for this month in terms of players. As mentioned, I spoke to Darren Curry about that Jack Taylor move, so we can hear his thoughts. I think he's hoping to get the green light from the chairman to spend a bit of that money on his squad. But there's plenty more in there. This weekend, Bath City as well. Jerry Gill going really well in National League South. They've won 9 of their last 12 to put them right in the title race, and they'll be looking out for how Bradley Quinton gets on against their title rivals Wilson on Saturday.
So plenty to look forward to on Sunday morning when the non-league paper hits your newsstands. Don't forget to scour the newsagents for it, or subscribe to it via subscription, so it hits your inbox or hits your postbox on the morning. David, as ever, always a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for a fantastic roundup of this week's non-league news, and we'll speak to you soon.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me on, Tim.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Dave Anderson for joining me.
I'm gonna tell you this, guys and girls. We're just about to close the show, and Tim couldn't find the script and was saying, what do I normally say? He's only done it about 7,000 times, you know, but he's had a long day. But thank you ever so much, sir, and get yourself home.
It's been a long year already. it's been a busy start to the year for non-league. But a big thank you for joining me.
Oh, the other thing is, big derby game for you Saturday, isn't there?
A big derby game away at Harrowborough.
Yeah, which I'll miss, unfortunately, away.
Well, yeah, maybe I can refer you to the gaffer tapes and episode 2. You can listen back to Steve Baker, manager at Harrowborough. I'm sure I can give him some stick at the weekend for that. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson at Dave Anderson 78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, myself at Tim Fuel. You can listen to this podcast and the Non-League Gaffer Tapes every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, you just smart speakers, podcast aggregation sites. That's easy for me to say. And I should now say thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.